Welcome to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is your host, Tyler Yonke, episode 139, Crazy Tour de France edition. We're going to discuss today stages 16 through 19, get you caught up on that, do some analysis and commentary. Look, riders are fighting. They're getting sent home from the tour. Just as the weather changes in Thibaut Pinot's favor, he says, F it, I'm out of here. It's a Colombian invasion at the Tour de France. Just as the tour is starting to strain their neck to be able to see Paris, we now have a total transition. Is the race still decided? Do we know who's coming up? We'll do some things to make it go home, some predictions, some winners and losers. It makes me wonder, what happened in 1985 to make God hate France so much? We'll discuss it coming up. Should we start off with God hating France? It looks like maybe that's the issue. Today, stage 19, we'll get right to, we'll talk about that, but I'm going to kind of, once again, go back to stages 16, 17, 18. We'll do a real quick recap of that, and then we'll talk about all the drama that happened today in the Tour de France. Weird weather, weird people exiting. Well, no, I'm not saying Thibaut Pinot is weird, but weird circumstances. Look, every day we've said this is a three-week race, and from day one, you know, this person looks good. Julian Alaphilippe is a good, actually, all the way along. He's struggled lately, but he's still been looking good, firing rockets off. Thibaut Pinot was looking exceptional, going off with Julian Alaphilippe early on, and then taking the grains up in the mountains in the Pyrenees. You know, remember when he was up, rocketing out there to a stage win, flicking his elbow for Bernal to come through. Bernal's like, I can't do it. And he just attacks again and he goes off. He was the guy that we were saying, hey, look, if you can get rid of Julian Alaphilippe, who we expected to have that happen, Pinot is your man. And everyone has been picking him. But things change. Next thing you know, Bernal starts to look good. Kruijswijk kind of in the mix. Then Geraint Thomas is looking bad. He's looking good. And then you have Movistar. What is up with Movistar? Well, we'll talk about all those things. So remember, last we heard, Simon Yates gets a third stage win for Mitchelton Scott. Pretty good announcing win in the mountains. Stage 16 was Nîmes to Nîmes. It was just 177 kilometers circuit race. You expect this to be a true sprinter stage. And what you had in the end was Caleb Ewing blasting out of the pack. They came down to the finish. There's lead outs for, I had said before, I didn't think Viviani was going to be going for this because he had started to do a lot of work for his team, Julian Alaphilippe, who's in the yellow jersey. What happened was you actually saw Quickstep on the front doing a decent amount of work, and they did a lead out train for him. Caleb Ewing gets pushed in the back. He's like 6-8 guys back, but he launches himself pretty early and just rockets himself out, takes the win pretty convincing fashion. I think he got up to like 40 miles an hour in the sprint. Viviani actually holds on for second place. Dylan Groenewegen, not quite the sprinter that you would hope for, or the battle that you saw with Caleb Ewan before. So Caleb Ewan gets his second win of the Tour de France going away, and he was pretty happy about that. All of his teammates gave him the high fives, everything you would expect. Caleb Ewan still had Julian Alaphilippe, no changes in the overall general classification after stage 16. I'm sorry. Stage 17, Pointe du Gard to Gap. Now, this Gap is a famous city as far as the tour goes. A lot of times they come into this town at kind of a transition, and they'll end up there right before they go into the Alps. This was no different. It had a little Cat 4 and then a Cat 3 before the finish down into the town of Gap. And look, this one was a breakaway. You had Matteo Trentin comes out. Mitchelton Scott gets their fourth stage win of the tour. Matteo Trentin, he's kind of a pack sprinter, not really a pack sprinter. He's a breakaway sprinter. He does, you know, look, I think, 2 years ago in the Vuelta, he got four stage wins. Some of those were kind of in a breakaway. I think two of them were in a breakaway. Two of them were in a field sprint. But, you know, this is not quite the same sprinters, and they get diminished there from some of those climbs. So he's just kind of one of those riders for Mitchelton Scott. Mitchelton Scott comes out after having Adam Yates not be able to contest the overall, and they do what they do, and they've had a tremendous tour with Simon MP and now Matteo Trentin. Matteo Trentin is the reigning European road race champion, so he wears that interesting jersey. Anyway, there was a little, the breakaway that day had, I don't know, 8, 10, 15 minutes, something like that. And what you ended up from behind, they're coming into the last climb up, and there was some fear that perhaps Julian Alaphilippe would, you know, take a little bit of a launch. So you have two teams. You have Team Jumbo-Visma and you have Ineos. And I'm sure everyone's seen the video of this, but watching it at the time, Luke Rowe's coming up on the right side. Tony Martin for Jumbo-Visma is on the front, and he doesn't want him to be in the front. I think they were just all jostling, trying to get their team riders in position. And Tony Martin is kind of pushing him over into dirt, kind of looking to see which way he's going. And it's intentional. I mean, it was a 3-time swerve to make sure Luke Rowe wasn't coming past him or to push him off into the dirt. Looked pretty bad at the time. Those two guys come over the line. I guess they're like, okay, shaking hands or something like this. But what inevitably happened was the UCI jury, you know, like there's cameras everywhere nowadays. You can't get away with it, especially when you're doing this on the front. And they both get disqualified. A little bit more review shows that Luke Rowe had actually been, after this incident, had grabbed the jersey of Tony Martin and trying to push him around. You even look at more videos, and why was Tony Martin even doing this? Well, before that, you have on the right-hand side as the field is going, left-hand as you're looking at it on TV from the front, Luke Rowe is kind of gets himself third position behind the Jumbo-Visma guys, and all of a sudden he just decides he wants to go way left into the middle of the peloton, and he just starts squeezing out Kruiswijk, and I don't think that made Tony Martin very happy. And it was kind of a weird move. I mean, I know, look, they say it's hot. These guys are getting worked up about it. But, you know, look, we all can have stressful jobs. You can't just go around assaulting people. And look, Dave Brailsford, the general manager of Ineos, is kept saying, you know, look, this was a red card, like an ejection. They should have only had a yellow card. I don't know. Do you want to compare it to soccer or football? I think it's not the same rules. I mean, guys in soccer all the time, they fall down with their, you know, faking the leg hurting, all these things. Let's not compare it with that. Or someone else is saying, hey, look, in hockey, that's part of the culture of the sport. And I understand there's part of this sport, you know, look, there's two things. One is take the hands off the handlebars for Luke Rowe. That's, you're not supposed to do that. But I almost think, but the action on the bike of intentionally trying to crash someone out, I don't care if it's at a, slow speed or not. That's pretty egregious. And you've got to basically boot these guys out of the race. Remember last year, Johnny Moscon, for Ineos, or then it was Team Sky, was punching a rider. I think it was for FDJ. I'm trying to remember his name. Anyway, he was throwing a bottle at him, and you know, right at the front of the race. Once again, they're not good criminals, so they don't do this in the right fashion. They got DQ'd. These both guys got DQ'd. With all these mountain stages coming up, and Team Ineos not quite where they have been before, this could potentially be a downfall for both of these. But the benefit they have is the weak team of Dequena Quickstep when it comes to defending the overall and the GC, the general classification, and their rider in the yellow jersey, Julian Alaphilippe. They're diminished, so they don't need to worry the Ineos and Jumbo. As long as they're able to get rid of Alaphilippe in the mountains when he doesn't have a team anyway, that's not going to hurt them as much. So they don't need quite as strong a team, but I'm sure they will like it. But after stage 19, you know, that may come into effect on the last day. So that was stage 17. There was no change in the general classification. Alaphilippe said when he saw those two guys, you know, freaking out and, you know, kind of going at each other, he made some comments like, look, I'm not going to attack. Just everybody calm down. You know, let's not crash anybody out here. Okay, stage 18. This is day one of the final three big days in the Alps. This was Embrun to Valor, 207 kilometers. This happened on Thursday. The only problem with this outline, and I was talking to Kurt Mills, podcast partner here, about it, and he was not looking forward to the fact that they're ruining this stage. Heads up to an HC climb, and then it has a 20-kilometer descent down to the finish. Yeah, you're right. It changes things. Riders are going to do things differently to the peak. They're not going to, because the race is down the bottom, so they still have to put out a lot of energy, and we'll talk about what actually happens there. But with that being the case, they don't race to the top with the same vigor and emptying the tank as they would normally. And I think you can kind of see how that plays out. So it kind of diminishes some of the lure of the race and the excitement, hopefully, you know, carnage on GC. But those that are hoping for Alaphilippe, this was a prime stage for them to still be able to hold on to hope. Okay, have a Cat 3, a Cat 1, an HC, an HC, and then drop down into Velour. What you have early on is a fairly sizable break, and Nairo Quintana of Movistar gets in this break. That break at going up to the Izuard, which is a second to last climb on the day, and HC, the break has about 8:45. So he's close to virtual yellow at that point. His own team, Movistar, decides that they're going to get in place and they're going to bring that break. There's no one else in that break. There's Romain Bardet. There's really no one at all that's threatening on the overall GC. I think there were some Ineos riders, but some Movistars. But they're working. Movistar is working, and they bring that break. By the time that they go over the top of the Izuard with Bardet, Mike Woods, Nairo Quintana, I'm not sure if who else was there. The point is, when they went over the top of the Izuard, they had brought that break down to around 4 some minutes. So they'd cut 4 minutes off of the lead to Nairo over the top. Now, look, so Nairo ends up going into the last climb. He punches it up the Galibier. He actually has a time a minute faster than all the other riders going over that. Comes down the finish. He ends up winning the stage. Great. He moves up to like fifth place overall. It takes, you know, five different places. He moves up. Is like four something out. He moves ahead of his own teammate, Landa. And you're like, look, if they hadn't have brought him back, he might have been really close to yellow. Yeah. So this is what's interesting is, and you saw on the day as well. We'll talk. Let's actually get into what happened with the general classification guys. So Nairo ends up winning the stage, but he's not typically a huge threat to the overall at that moment, but they don't give him too much leash. They bring him back. Like I said, he wins by about 4 or 5 minutes, but the action on the final climb up the Galibier is it starts off with Bernal attacking, but he attacks maybe 4K to the top, maybe a little less than that. And when he goes, it's not like a harsh attack. He just kind of rides up. The word is that his teammate, Geraint Thomas, said, look, I want you to stir the pot. Let's get some action going here. You attack. I expect it to kind of just shred up. Well, it didn't really do that. The other riders just kind of meandered their way. And at the top, then Bernal, about a K and a half, Geraint Thomas. Now, Bernal at the time has about a 45-second gap on them. And now Thomas takes the attack. He does actually get a gap. But behind, you still have Buchmann, he's chasing. You have Thibaut Pinot, he's chasing. Urans, I think, is in there. Port's flailing around the back. Julian Alaphilippe is there. Obviously, Kruijswijk. And Alaphilippe starts to flail. He has to come around Port, or Port comes around him. And Thomas is still having a little gap. And right before the top, the Pinot, Kruijswijk group, Landa, they connect with Geraint Thomas. So he really doesn't do any pulling on them. But that gap to Bernal does decrease by about 15 seconds. They have about a 30-second gap over the top. And that actually stays somewhere in that range till the finish. They have 15 seconds or so over 30 to 15 seconds, somewhere in that range over Alaphilippe. And he goes breakneck on this descent. Now look, there's a little wetness down there. People are making a big issue about the fact that he had disc brakes. Probably good for the way he descends like a maniac anyway. He does really well. He catches up to the group. He goes straight through them. He tries to drop them. In the end, it might have been, why waste your energy? You've already caught the group. You're not going to make up much more time. They have reason to chase Bernal. Most of them at least do. They haven't really made Alaphilippe do a lot of the work ever on his own on this race. They attack him or they go to the front themselves. So I wouldn't expect that. He didn't need to do that. In the end, you get Bernal ends up moving himself up into second place, and you had Alaphilippe lose. Actually, he stayed with that group that was with everybody on the GC riders. So he catches back up with Thomas. You have Quintana. He gets the win. There's a smattering of guys that were in the break. It's from Ineos. You have Bernal comes in at 4:46 back. Kruijswijk leads the next group over 5:18. So, they're 30 seconds or so there to Bernal. He gets a little bit, but that's with Buchmann, Thibaut Pinot, Thomas, Alaphilippe, Rigoberto Urán, Landa, Port, and then Warren Barguil and a few others. Smattering comes in a little bit later. Look, we're going to just take a look at that. Pinot. So like I said before, when we had the first after the second rest day, Pinot was probably the guy we're going to pick for this overall. I mean, if you can get rid of Julian Alaphilippe, he's the one. But he did not take the reins at all. Well, he did pull over the top of it, but you can just tell he didn't quite have the mojo that he had been having in prior days. And it comes out that he's been having an issue, and we'll talk about that. Look, the weather was a big deal because Pinot has been notorious and said, I don't like the heat. I like it cold. I like it, you know, a little more in that kind of range. And I don't do as well in the heat. And it's been super hot over there in the hundreds. And he was kind of laboring, but yet some of that climb had some rain. So there was, you know, look, I don't know if that's his problem, but we come out that it's actually a different, more of a physical issue. Stage 19, we're looking to look. This is stage two of the three big stages in the Alps. Tomorrow we have stage 20. It's going to be the big final brouhaha. But this one, 100 and I think it was about 126.5 kilometers, a Cat 3, a Cat 2, a Cat 3 in an HC category, and then up the Iseron, and then they drop down, and then they go up to Teens and a Cat 1 finish. Now, the problem, though, is if you look at the profile, those threes, those two, and that three again, all the way up to the HC, it's pretty much climbing all day. So even though you have a little respite on a few little descents and they have some summits, it's not much. It's a big-ass giant climb up to kilometer 89. The fireworks start off early. There's brakes going up the road. They don't get too much time, but it starts to smatter and shatter all over the road. This is the day we're talking about because this is the big, there's, and look back once again, you know, when things happen, Mateo Trentin wins the stage, for Mitchelton Scott should be the big news, but the big news that day was Luke Rowe and Tony Martin acting like children on their bike. Today we have, you know, should be a big day with Bernal and the other GC and Julian Alaphilippe, what's going to happen with them. But what happens is early on, Thibaut Pinot. He's pulling over to the side. He's going to the doctor. They're spraying some stuff on his leg. He's taken off a bandage. So evidently he's had it. Well, it comes out that he had some sort of leg muscle lesion. So maybe like a strained muscle. He said he hit it on the handlebars trying to avoid a wreck 2 days prior. And it's been pretty bad. Matter of fact, to the point where early on, he is struggling big time. He's losing minutes. You can tell he's spinning harshly. Everyone's passing him. His teammates kind of patting him on the back. So the team all knew what it was because no one was stopping for him. He starts hugging one of his big, he's crying. He starts hugging one of his big riders on his team there. You know, a guy that he never sees in the mountains. And he crawls off the bike, gets out. He's crying in the car. You know, pretty bad day for France on that point. Up in the break, there's a little bit of a break. Rigoberto Urán, he's the lead rider as far as GC goes in there, but that break never gets more than, you know, maybe 2 minutes or so. And then the stage gets canceled today. Sorry to spoil it, but that's everyone probably knows about that anyway. So it's a good thing that all the leaders decided to attack on the Iseron prior to the penultimate, the final big climb at the day at Teens. Because if they hadn't have, they would have had a very, very big missed opportunity. And you see Geraint Thomas about halfway up the climb or so, he decides to attack. It's probably what he needed to do instead of yesterday. He doesn't get much of a gap. Kruijswijk comes up to him. Kruijswijk attacks. Now you're starting to see Alaphilippe distance. And with that, Bernal's on his wheel. Then Bernal easily goes around. He gets up to the group and then he goes through it. Bernal's gone. He starts getting remnants of the break. Next thing you know, he's riding with Simon Yates, who'd been up in the break. He's drilling away. He's getting further and further. You have Kruijswijk with De Ploes. He is leading the fight. You start to see Port going out the back. Alaphilippe is doing the best he can. Walt Poels is hanging on with Alaphilippe. He comes around Alaphilippe. He breaks up there. And over the top of the climb, you see Bernal goes over there a little bit ahead of Yates. He's got about 210 on the yellow jersey, about one or so, 110 on Thomas, Kruijswijk, De Ploes, Landa, Bookman. And then, like I said, Alaphilippe comes flying across. And he's, you know, look, all the commentators are like, oh, look what he did yesterday, that brave descent. He's going to make all his time back up. Well, he would have to make up, you know, minute plus to Thomas. He'd have to make up about, 2 minutes there to Bernal. suddenly it comes across the news that there's this bad weather. There's a hailstorm down in the valley before the climb to Teens, and they stop the entire race. They pull the plug. The riders are confused. They're still descending mad because breakneck speeds, because for them, the weather is just fine. But look, there's like a 300 meter, almost less than a kilometer section where it was massive hailstorm and water came across the road. There's like ice. They're trying to scoop it out. Then further up the climb, near getting to Teens, there's been showing that there was a full-on mudslide. So they would not have been able to do anything. So what do? They end up taking the times from the top of the climb with the Iseron, and everyone is kind of weirded out. They're upset. As a matter of fact, we haven't even really got full results coming in. So we're still waiting to see what that happens, but they're going to be taking the times from, like I said, the top of the Iseron, and that's going to be the final. There was a bonus of 8 seconds over the top. There was also going to be a bonus at the finish. I doubt they're going to be giving those times. So here's what you have for and these are no times official, but these are what you have for the GC right now. You have Egan Bernal in first place, Julian Alaphilippe in second, Garrett Thomas in third, Kruijswijk in fourth, Buckman in fifth, Landa sixth, Ruan in seventh, Quintana, Barqui, Valverde. Really weird day. I think they probably made the right call due to the fact that landslide, like, you know, the guys want to ride through the water, or that maybe they neutralize and set everyone on the other side. Well, then they had this landslide that was, it looks like concrete flowing across the road. So a lot of trouble there. Look, I heard Doug Ryder, the manager for Dimension Data, and he's like, look, how in this day, and this is just weird that these happen. How does this happen in this day and age that, you know, we can still have these things happen? I'm like, dude, you're in the Alps, in, I don't care if it's summer or winter, you know, rainstorms. Are you saying you want to control the weather now? Landslides? I mean, look, you're not talking about giant infrastructure out there. This happens, you know, you can ride on, you went rode on a freaking dirt road up La Planche of Belfi. It happens. You can't control everything. Sorry. You know, it's the way it is, but we'll have to wait and see, get a little bit more times. I think they made the right call due to the fact that, like I said, the road was completely washed out, but it really sucks for some of these riders. So you have Bernal, like let's take a look at kind of breaking down how would they have possibly ridden differently if the road was, you know, the finish at the top. Look, I don't know that you, maybe Bernal gets more time. I don't know those guys in the break. They could have been maybe closed it down. You know, maybe Alaphilippe says, oh, the finish is right here. I'm really going to go hard and bury myself. But, you know, he still had another climb to go. So he had to measure his efforts. They all did. But maybe like Thomas, and we'll get to this on our winners and losers. But, you know, Thomas may be a kind of a loser on the day, because if he's able to at all, he wasn't doing any work up the climb because he was sitting on. Kruijswijk was. Bachmann was doing some work. You know, Landa was doing some. And obviously Alaphilippe was having to chase. So if he's just sitting in because his teammate's up the road, maybe coming that last climb, it's a little more of a power climb. He might be able to get some distance and close down to either Bernal or put more time on Alaphilippe. If Alaphilippe doesn't make connection, which I don't think he was going to make connection to that group, take a minute to get back to Thomas, then he's going basically solo through the valley and up the final climb. And that's a lot of work for him. And like I said, Thomas being out there, being able to do his own thing. Nairo Quintana, I mean, he slips down again because he got blown out of that group. Rigoberto Urán is coming up, but he was still having trouble in the climb. I don't see Port anywhere. He's had some issues. Kruijswijk did attack. He looked pretty good doing that. Then he just kind of had to hold on. You had De Plus out there helping him out. I'm sure some of these guys were somewhat holding on for that final climb still, because they still had to obviously go up, but you don't want to blow everything out on the Iseron when you still have, you know, to go down a big long descent, some ups and downs, and then the final climb up to the finish. So kind of a bummer all around that we didn't get to see this play out, but you know, it's kind of the way it is. What's happening coming up? Well, you have your final race there, 131 kilometers tomorrow, starts from Albertville to Val Thorens. It's a Cat 1, about 33K in, Cat 2, around just before 80K, and then you have your final pitch up to the finish. And the deal with this one is it's around 30K. It's a 30-kilometer climb. The gradient's not super bad. It's got some respite along the way, some little downs and ups, but you pretty much are climbing from kilometer 96 and a half to 130. So that's a average of 5.5. It's not a, you know, ultimate steep, but you're flying along. It's the last day of the race. What will be interesting now is to see with Ineos basically having Bernal in the lead. And I'm not sure exactly by how much. I think it's like maybe 35, 40 seconds. You don't expect Julian Alaphilippe to be able to attack and to take this on, because I think he's just been able to trying to defend at this point. He's, you know, doing what he can. If he attacks, he's probably going to explode. So are you going to see kind of what we have not seen this whole tour, thank God, and what you've seen for the last 7 years, which is just Ineos slash Sky going to the front and just kind of setting the pace and kind of deadening it for everybody? I expect with everyone still close proximity, one of the guys that would have been fun here would have been Thibaut Pinot, but obviously he's out. So you don't have that. But, you know, Kruijswijk, he doesn't have the jump. I mean, who's going to maybe have a battle, an infight here, a la 1986, Bernard Hinault and Greg LeMond with Geraint Thomas and Bernal? I think that Ineos and is not going to be doing that. So, you know, look, I don't know what to expect, but it will be interesting. Final big day, and then we obviously have a little promenade into Paris on Sunday. How about some things that make you go, hmm? Sagan's influence on the weather protocol, extreme weather protocol. The other day when it was super hot, Sagan had come out and said, look, they need to do something. It's hot, shorten the stages. They need to do something about this weather. We have this union that does nothing. We pay a bunch of money to them and they're not doing any enforcement, and I really, you know, something should happen. Okay, well, first of all, I don't know if he's ever, I'm sure he's raced in Tour Down Under. I mean, here in Northern California growing up, you know, we've raced in well over 100 degrees. I mean, I don't think it got any hotter than maybe 100, 101 there when they're racing. It sucks. Maybe they could change the time of day, but it sounds like maybe they listened to him with today's the hailstorm that shortened the stage. Peter, you know, maybe you got what you wanted. The UCI and the ASO finally listened to you and they shortened the stage due to the extreme weather. Of course, it's not quite what you expected. All right, winners and losers on the day in the last few stages. Obviously, winner would be Bernal and Ineos. The biggest win. I mean, Bernal last 2 days in the mountains has just looked spectacular. He looks like the Bernal that we've seen. He's coming into form. You know, when he was not able to hang with Thibaut Pinot a few stages ago, you start to think maybe he's not quite. But you know, even at the time, he was still up the road from everyone else. So he's shown he can do it. What is he, 22? This is pretty scary to think about what might be the next few years. The fact that he rides on Ineos and they just back him this whole time. Maybe kind of a brutal tour to watch. So this has been a very good one because, one, he's young. He's coming in there. I don't think he had the best season so far. So it put everyone kind of on par. But he shows the potential to be a big, big time winner. Maybe multiple tours coming up. But you never know. I mean, look what happened with Thibaut Pinot. You bang your knee, your thigh on a handlebar, and you're not able to go. Biggest loser, I would say France and Thomas. Remember Macron came up there, president of France came up and, had his pictures taken with, Romain Bardet and Pinot, and he was just all excited because, Bardet, I think, had the polka dot jersey, and, Thibaut Pinot won a stage it was actually Julian Alaphilippe because he was in the yellow jersey. So maybe he jinxed them and he's the one to blame for all this. So France, if you want to, you guys seem to hate Macron, you can continue hating him. I think him showing up at the race, everything's been downhill since then. So the biggest loser on the day. Yeah. How about some predictions? I think you're going to see, without a problem, Bernal is going to win this race. And it may be less than the time frame. He may open it up a little bit more. I think you are going to see Julian Alaphilippe slip away from the podium. I thought if he went into today's stage at the finish with the yellow, it's a good chance he can still win it. I think he's going to slip off of the podium altogether. And you're going to have Kruijswijk and Thomas. But, you know, there may be a good little, we'll have to see what the time gaps are here. Good battle still with Buchmann. So it may be exciting, you know, if Bernal's the guy and maybe they just kind of ignore him and they say, I'm just going to race for second. and throw it all out there with that opportunity, you may still see some good explosions on the last day. All right, those are predictions. We'll, you know, hopefully, look, crazy day, last few days, you know, we said this guy is going to be the winner. No, this guy is going to be the winner. All along, Julian Alaphilippe is still hung in there. We've reduced the top six to now just five because Pinot is gone. Bummer to see that. He was fighting really well. But, you know, this is the Tour de France, and this is the excitement we're looking for. And so all this drama, daily changes. Nairo's in yesterday. Nairo's out today. Movistar doing their weird tactics yesterday. Now, who knows what's going on? Either way, I'm sure you're going to enjoy stage 20. We'll come back with a full recap, probably stage 21. We'll do a recap of the entire tour and give you a breakdown of what we thought, not just on a daily basis, but on an overall 30,000 foot perspective once we digested everything. Thanks everyone for joining. This has been episode 139 of the Between Two Wheels podcast. You can check us out on any of the platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbeam. We also have a YouTube channel. Check us out there, the Facebook page as well. Give us any of your comments, your concerns, anything you want to say, some critiques. Other than that, thank you for tuning in and cross your fingers for a good race. For now, he's going to do it.